Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 786. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about almsgiving and rice growing, a slow boat, a night market, and a bamboo bridge as we go to the nation of Laos. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Laos. I'd like to welcome to the show Alexis Rubenstein. You can find Alexis on Instagram at Redstone Alexis. And Alexis, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Alexis has come to talk to us about Laos. Alexis, what's your connection with Laos?
In 2019, we found ourselves at a transition point in our lives. My husband, he retired from the Air Force, and we sold our house, and we were kind of between places to live. So we decided to go nomadic for a while. We ended up doing a big road trip across North America and traveled through Central America and Southeast Asia for a few months. And we decided to go to Laos just because we had heard good things. And we went to some of the sort of more popular places that people go, like Thailand, and we wanted to mix it up with just some more unusual places.
Excellent. And why should someone go to Laos?
Well, Laos is a really cool place to go if you're interested in cultural travel. It's a really neat mix of Buddhist culture and French colonial culture and architecture. And it's just a really neat town. Well, Luang Prabang. I didn't go to the rest of Laos. So we were in northern Thailand. You can actually take a boat down the Mekong River from a small town near Chiang Rai in northern Thailand to Luang Prabang. It's an overnight trip. It takes 2 days, and it's a wonderful way to get there. It's really peaceful, and you're going through the most remote jungle, like inaccessible villages and stops that you can't get any other way. On the second day, you pull into Luang Prabang, and it's a city in the middle of the jungle, and it's got so much wonderful culture and French colonial buildings, and it's kind of a surprise after being in the remote jungle for 2 days.
And you say down the river, that would be down the Mekong.
Yes.
Excellent. So what kind of itinerary do you recommend for us?
So we spent about 10 days there, but you could see almost everything in probably about a week. We based ourselves in Luang Prabang and took day trips. Okay. And there were several wonderful things that we did in the town. And there's a few day trips that only take less than a couple of hours to get to from town.
Well, let's back up and talk about the boat ride also, because I think our listeners would be really interested in that. So you say you picked that up in Chiang Rai in Thailand?
It's near Chiang Rai. It's about, I would say, an hour from Chiang Rai. There's a border town on the Thai side, and you take a little shuttle over to Hue Sai. That's the town in Laos, and you have to go through the customs and get your visa and everything. And then you leave early the next morning on the slow boat. It's a tiny, tiny town. You just walk down to the port. The slow boat takes 2 days. It stops at a tiny little inaccessible town called Pak Bang. We stayed in $7 hotel rooms right over the river, and it was beautiful. And then it makes a couple of other stops on the way to Luang Prabang, including the Pak Ao Caves, which are these caves set up in the side of a cliff, and they're full of over 4,000 Buddha figures that people have left there. It also stops at a Hmong village, where you can actually visit the villagers and kind of see how they live, and they have handicrafts for sale and everything. So it was a really neat introduction to Laos before we got to the city.
Now, is this a tourist boat or a local boat?
So you have a couple options. Mm-hmm. There's the local slow boat, and since I had my kids with me, we decided to do a slightly upgraded version.
Okay.
Where you pay a little bit more, but it's not like the local taxi where you're not sure if you're going to get a seat or not. It
right.
could be really crowded. They limit the number of people if you get the slightly upgraded trip. They also serve food on board. That's what we ended up doing.
But it's not you're not on Viking river cruise or something like that. This is a local provider, just a little. And when you say you got the more expensive option, I'm guessing more expensive by Laos standards.
Exactly. And it's the same boat. It's just a very simple wooden boat with kind of a deck and some wooden benches and blankets. That's about it.
No cabins?
No cabins.
Okay. Definitely the local boat. All right.
But yeah, the slightly upgraded version, you're just guaranteeing that you're not packed in with a bunch of people who are just using it to transport between villages.
Yeah,
if
sure.
If you do that way, that's supposed to be fun as well, but you're risking maybe not having a seat or missing the boat if it's not on time. So.
And did you book that ahead of time, or did you book it right there in Quayside?
You can book it the day of, but we did book it a couple of days out.
Okay.
We had heard that sometimes you can get different prices if you wait to the last minute.
Okay. And is there a brand or a name we should look for if we were interested in booking that?
I can't think of a specific one. There's a lot of companies that will go ahead and process the tickets and bring you there and everything. You could probably get it through a hotel or just a quick internet search.
Okay, great. Anything else you wanted to talk about that part? For instance, you mentioned the caves going in there. What did your kids think of going into these caves with all these old Buddhas?
Oh, they thought it was great. The part they didn't like was some of the folks outside had these caged birds, and they were trying to get people to pay to release them.
Oh, no.
And so so they weren't a fan of seeing the poor birds caged up. But the actual cave itself was really neat because it's very dark in there, so you just have a little bit of light glinting in from the outside on the Buddha figures. And it's just a really neat, peaceful place. You can also do that trip on a day trip from Luang Prabang. If you don't take the slow boat in, if you flew in, you could still see the caves.
Okay. Anything else you want to talk about that trip before we get into the city?
I don't think so. It was just our first introduction to the food, which is real similar to Thai food, but with their own twist. And it was just really peaceful.
Excellent. Cool. Then you got into Luang Prabang. Mm-hmm. And you stayed in the most expensive hotel in Luang Prabang.
Nope. We stayed in a very small guest house that was basically beds and walls with like a few inches in between. We weren't spending a whole lot of time in the room. So.
Okay. And what would you recommend we see in Luang Prabang?
So in town, they have a really great night market. It's bustling. It's full of local art and food vendors and music. A lot of the hill tribes come down and showcase and sell some of their arts and handicrafts at the night market. It's got a real good feel to it. It's very lively.
ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. I also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken breast or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to butcherbox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
There's also, this is a very quick stop, but it's something that's kind of cool to see. There's a bamboo bridge that's only there certain times of year during the dry season, and it washes away when the Mekong rises up in the wet season. Huh. And they have to rebuild it every single year. And then probably one of the big draws in Luang Prabang is the almsgiving ceremony.
Yeah.
We really wanted to participate in the ceremony when we went, but we had heard that they've had problems in the past with tourists kind of stepping over boundaries and doing things that were inappropriate, because the almsgiving ceremony, it's a Buddhist ceremony. It's not put on for the tourists.
Right. I have done one of these on the other side of the border in Thailand, in very eastern Thailand. So we're probably talking about the same, but just for those who don't know, so you got up very early, if it's the same kind of thing I'm talking about.
I think we got up at 3 a.m.
3 a.m. Oh, gosh. Oh, that was even earlier than we did. And then you basically have monks who were there with their, I want to say begging bowls, because I don't know the right term, if there's a different term for that. And you're purchasing local food and putting in their begging bowl, and they're giving you or your children or whoever a blessing.
Yes.
Okay. I'm on the right track.
Yes. We've also seen it in Thailand too, but I think because there's such a large concentration of temples there, there were many, many, many monks going through the streets.
And it's a way for the community to basically support the monks and feed them, literally.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the only food that they get for the day. Right. Mm-hmm. It's a sacred Buddhist ceremony. Mm-hmm. We wanted to participate, like I said, but we didn't want to do anything that would be inappropriate or overstep.
You weren't doing your selfie poses with them.
Exactly. And okay. We didn't want to do anything unintentionally either. So we actually ended up booking a tour.
Like a small walking tour. Okay.
Yeah. It was a local company. And basically they set aside a place in the street for us. Mm-hmm. And they provided the food and picked us up and brought us over there. And then they went over how everything worked and told us the history and then told us exactly how to do it and where to be and everything, so that we were able to respect their ceremony. And it was really, really neat. It was still dark when they came through, and they gave us sweets and rice. And mm-hmm. we basically scooped a little bit of rice and sweets into their baskets as they went by.
And then you found this tour through your guest house or online, or?
It was through the guest house.
Okay.
And then also another part of the tour that was really great, especially with the kids learning about where we were at. We went through the market and we stopped at one of the temples and sat with one of the local monks and had sort of a question and answer session where he told us about how they lived and their typical day and gave us mm-hmm. a meditation lesson.
Okay. Excellent. Now, in terms of the getting up early, so when we got up early, we had to go get the food. We had to find, basically, this happens in the local market where I did it. Mm-hmm. So the opposite of the night market, this is the early bird market.
Yes.
And you had somebody who helped you pick out the foods, or actually brought the food. You didn't have to decide what was appropriate to buy or such.
Exactly, which I probably would have picked the wrong thing. So I'm glad they did that.
I get that.
And it was great, too, just having the context explained to us so we could appreciate it more. And then, again, later talking to the monk, he told us the age that they become monks and what their days are like and a little bit more about the form of Buddhism that they practice. And monks can't touch women. So every time I'm in a country where I am introduced to a Buddhist monk, I always have an awkward moment where I go to shake their hand at the introduction. And then I remember that I can't touch them. So fortunately, I stopped myself in time.
I don't think it would be a permanent scar on their record, but yeah.
Our absolute favorite thing that we did in Luang Prabang was a program that they have at the Living Land Organic Farm. Mm-hmm. And it's called Rice Farmer for a Day. And you spend the entire day at their farm, and they have the rice growing at different stages in different parts of the farm.
Okay.
So they take you through all 12 steps of growing rice and harvesting rice and everything that goes along with it. And it was amazing. It was one of our absolute favorite things we've ever done, including in this trip. We were plowing the paddies to prepare them behind a water buffalo. And we were in the mud barefoot, planting the rice and harvesting with a scythe and threshing it and just hands-on doing every single step. It was unforgettable. It was great.
And that was another local tour that was packaged up for tourists to do.
Yes, it is. And you can actually contact the farm too and just book directly through them.
Okay.
There was a couple other people there, but we had the place to ourselves for the most part. The kids, they still talk about it. Our water buffalo was named Susan and she was a little hard to handle. She would stop and pee and then we'd have to keep plowing right through it.
So you didn't even have the iron buffalo like we saw in Cambodia, which is kind of the next step up from the water buffalo, one wheel tractor.
That would have been easier to handle, probably. A little less temperamental than Susan.
Interesting.
One of the other things that we enjoyed, too, that's not really a typical tourist guidebook thing to do is some volunteering. We volunteered at an animal rescue, but the one that was extra meaningful was a place called Big Brother Mouse. And they're a charitable organization that promotes literacy in Laos. And they have all kinds of programs. But the one that they really enjoy having tourists come help out with is a couple nights a week. You can go by there and you practice conversational English with the young men from the Hmong tribes that live in the hills near Laos.
Okay.
They can learn English and get better jobs and move out of their tribal areas if they want to. It's really fun. There were all these really great, fascinating young men there. And your only job as a tourist is to show up and speak English with them and have conversations with them for the night.
That actually reminds me of the question that I was thinking I wanted to ask when you were talking about the experience where you were communicating with the monks. Were they speaking to you in English or was your guide interpreting for you?
They were speaking in English.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you were able to get by in English relatively well in Luang Prabang.
Yes, I had no problems with that. Most of the people that we encountered spoke English.
I'm guessing as you were going in on the boat that English would have not necessarily been as widespread in the little villages and such? Okay.
Yes, for sure. Lao is actually similar to Thai. Like we learned a few of the words when we were there. Mm-hmm. Like instead of Sawadi in Thai, it's Sabaidi in Lao. So they're similar. They're parallel. One thing that's kind of funny is the currency. It's one U.S. dollar to 10,000 kip. Mm-hmm. And so when you take money out of the ATM, like you're a millionaire. You're taking out millions of kip.
I have found that when you're going to a country like that, it is useful if you do the math before you get on the plane, maybe, because I think it was in Vietnam, which had a similar ridiculous exchange rate.
Yes, the dong, yeah.
I walked away from the having gotten my money out of the cash machine, the ATM, and realized I picked up like $20. It was like, I did that math wrong, but I was terribly jet lagged. I had just flown from the U.S. And so it just would be useful to sort of figure out ahead of time how much money you think you might need and do the conversion rate while you're awake.
Definitely. And that was tough for us because we were going from country to country. So like you have to purge the last one and teach yourself a new one each time.
Yeah, I think what I usually do is I try and figure out which one of the bills is my 10 or my 20. It's sort of like then just try and use that and think in terms of that. But
a nice round number, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Excellent. What was your perception overall of Luang Prabang? So not a big high-tech city is my impression from seeing pictures of it, but fairly modern.
It is, especially in the area that where most tourists hang out. Mm-hmm. That's the area that has the sort of French colonial buildings and the bakeries, and the night market. And that's right on the river. There's also a ton of beautiful temples. As you go out from that main area, it's a lot more rural pretty quickly.
Okay.
It almost feels like an oasis. In the middle of nowhere, there's this bustling town. And then just in any direction out from it, there's nothing.
Well, and you mentioned French bakeries. And that's a little joy from when you're traveling in what used to be French Indochina is there's a pretty good bread there.
Yes, it was wonderful.
You don't get that in Thailand as much.
No, definitely not. Vietnam, though, as well.
Sure, yeah. Well, in Vietnam, you get the great sandwiches. I don't know what the cuisine is like. You say like Thai, but a little different with its own twist.
Yeah, a lot of the food that we had in Thailand, there were very similar items in Laos.
Okay.
A lot of vegetables and meats, noodles, rice, Larb is really a popular Lao dish that you can also find in Thailand. And that's the ground meat with spices that you eat like in a lettuce or a cabbage leaf.
Right.
And that was my favorite. I had a lot of that.
Okay.
Along with all the pastries.
Anything else you would recommend that we do while we're in Luang Prabang?
There is a couple of day trips that you can take. Mm-hmm. I mentioned the Pak Ao Caves and the Hmong village visit. There's also a really beautiful waterfall. It's called Quang Si Waterfall. And I believe it's about an hour away. And you can just hire a van or book a tour and they'll take you out there. It's got this pale blue water underneath it. It's just really, really pretty. And there's also a moon bear sanctuary right next to it. Very small. But you can see moon bears if you want to. And you can actually hike up to the top of the waterfall and look down, and there's a swing that you can swing out over the pools. It's just a really nice, peaceful day trip.
And I don't know that I can picture a moon bear. They're like a brown bear?
They're a very small Asian bear. They're black, and they have white marking. But they look like a small black bear.
Got it.
It was during the day when we went, so they weren't very active.
Okay.
And they have a little bit larger ears, too.
Got an Asian black bear, I guess, is the other name.
Yeah. I think that's it. A lot of people like to tour the temples, and you can also hike up. There's a hill that has a temple above the city, but we had just come from Thailand. So we walked around and we looked at some of the different temples, but we didn't take a specific tour that showcased all of them. But there's quite a variety, and they're really beautiful. They have the ornate Buddhist sculpture and art. Mm-hmm. They're very colorful. And so it just adds, you know, another layer of character to this town that's sort of a unique mix of all these different cultures.
Yeah, I find that when you're in Bangkok and you head towards the Laos border, the style of the temples changes to more of a Laos Cambodian style. And it's a very pretty style, but I don't know if I would know how to describe it differently. Mm-hmm. A number of white temples were the ones that we were seeing in that border area.
Yeah, and the shapes, I feel like, are a little bit different.
Yeah.
Less old.
Anything else we want to talk about in terms of itinerary before we do some of our wrap-up questions?
I think that's it. That pretty much filled up the 10 days that we were there. We were doing something just about every day.
When you mentioned skipping the temples, were there other things that tourists do that you skipped intentionally?
So they have a weaving school there.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can do a tour where you learn how to weave and do some of the local arts and see how they make their handicrafts and things like that.
Okay.
But yeah, the only other thing I can think of that I saw over and over again were temple tours, going around and seeing all the architecture and hearing the history and that type of thing. We usually tend to skip those architectural type tours whenever we travel. We prefer like the cultural hands-on stuff.
Okay. Excellent. Some of our wrap-up questions. You're standing in the prettiest spot in Laos, or at least in the part of Laos you saw. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
I would say the little tiny village that we stopped at overnight when we took the slow boat. It's called Pak Bang, and it's sort of in a cliff over the Mekong. And standing there watching the sunset over the Mekong was incredible. You could see all the colors reflected in the water. There's little fishing boats. There was an elephant across the way drinking water. And palms. It was incredible. That was definitely the prettiest spot.
Very cool. And one thing that makes you laugh and say, only in Laos.
When I left the guest house each time, there was a big cartoon sign, and it showed all the different ways that Westerners could be rude and then the correct way to act. Okay.
Is this the, you know, patting kids on the head and...
So it shows this American-looking cartoon guy patting a kid on the head and then, like, everyone around him looking shocked in the cartoon and then the correct way. And then a really loud person, like, yelling in a temple and then the correct way.
How about pointing your feet at someone?
Oh, I don't remember that one. Is that one?
It's a Thai thing, at least. And I think it's a Buddhist thing.
I wouldn't be surprised then if that was on there as well.
When you sit, you're very careful where you point your feet. You don't get higher than the Buddha if there's a Buddha in the room. And but patting on the head is just a obvious Westerner faux pas.
Yes. And it put me in my place every time I left. Just make sure don't do any of these things.
Useful to know. It's helpful. I'd consider it a service. Excellent. And if you had to summarize Laos and Luang Prabang in just three words, what three words are you going to use?
peaceful.
Okay.
Cultural.
Okay.
And colorful.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Alexis Rubenstein. Find her on Instagram at RedstoneAlexis. And Alexis, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Laos.
Thank you for having me. It's been great talking with you.
As always, my thanks go out to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. And special thanks today to Heidi Bonk, who is the latest patron of Amateur Traveler. If you're interested in learning what patrons get for their patronage or how you can become a patron of the show, go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. I had a review of the show on Apple Podcasts, and I appreciate all of you who take the time to review. This one's a 5-star review from Big Stick Carpet. Excellent travel podcast. Chris really puts in extra work to make this podcast great. From the interesting guests to the insightful questions and real-time Googling for facts and clarifications, I especially appreciate that he breaks every episode into chapters with the different photo, notes, and links for each topic or place discussed. I'm sure that's a ton of extra work, but I really appreciate it. I'm so glad somebody appreciates it because, yes, it actually adds hours to the creation of every episode of the show. If you don't know what Big Stick Carpet is talking about with some podcast players, you can see the pictures of what it is we're talking about. And also, for every episode of the show, you can look at the lyrics of the show and see the links of the things that we're talking about. So take advantage of that work that went in. I heard from Ashley in December. I'm in a group that was not quite ready to make travel plans, but my goodness, your episode on the Kimberley made me want to buy tickets immediately. Thank you for continuing to feed our wanderlust. And thanks so much, Ashley. I know what you mean. That episode actually made me want to book a trip to the Kimberley right away as well. And it makes me especially grateful for the wonderful guests that we have on the show who bring us these destinations that sometimes I've been to and sometimes make it onto my list as well. And since I have a little more time on this shorter episode, this is a good time for me to remind you that the way I find a lot of these guests is they write me and they pitch me things. And you, as a listener of the show, are certainly welcome to do the same. Just send it to host@amateurtraveler.com. I'm looking for something that is good for a North American traveler, even though I know some of you are not. About 70% of the listeners of the show are from the U.S. and another 5% from Canada or so. So we're predominantly focusing on a North American audience. Worth traveling to, a one-week itinerary, and preferably a trip that you have done in the last 2 years. We usually do that a year, but with COVID, we've expanded that a bit. But if you have a trip that we haven't covered that area, and we really should cover it, or we haven't covered it recently, and you think that you can present it in a way that people will want to go there, please do let me know. It doesn't matter if you're a blogger or an author or whatever. If you're someone who has done an interesting trip and you think you can explain it to people, then drop me an email. And one last piece of feedback. I heard from Emma on the episode we did on Mendocino, who wrote, "I love this episode and all your shows," and took down a few notes on which wineries to visit next time we're in the area. But I just wanted to say that it would be nice to acknowledge the indigenous people of the county. You and the guest mentioned that Mendocino feels old because its history goes back to the 1850s, which sort of made me cringe because, as we all know, there was lots of history before then, even if it's not visible today in the built environment. In the 1850s was actually the decade the Pomo people of Mendocino were moved onto reservations, and today their descendants are often in the news as they work to regain stewardship of their ancestral lands. You don't have to go far from the wineries and the galleries to learn about the Pomo people. The Kelly House Museum in Mendocino Town has some good info, and for anyone driving up 101, there's an excellent museum in Santa Rosa called the CIMCC, California Indian Museum and Cultural Center. Thanks for many years of travel enthusiasm and great tips. And Emma, I always try and think about that, but I think I screwed up in this episode, and you're right. I left out the Pomo people, and that's on me. And I did not know about the California Indian Museum and Cultural Center, and I've written about Santa Rosa, so that is definitely something I'm going to have to look into. So thank you so much. And with that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. If you want to pitch me an episode, send me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. Or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.